Our first lesson for today is from the 61st chapter of Isaiah. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who mourn in Zion, to give them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a faint spirit. They will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord to display his glory. They shall build up the ancient ruins. They shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities and the devastations of many generations. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and wrongdoing. I will faithfully give them their recompense, and I will make an everlasting covenant with them. Their descendants shall be known among the nations, and their offspring among the peoples. All who see them shall acknowledge that they are a people whom the Lord has blessed. I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My whole being shall exult in my God, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness. As a bridegroom decks himself with a garland, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels. For as the earth brings forth its shoots, and as a garden causes what is sown in it to spring up, so the Lord will cause righteousness and praise to spring up before all nations. The second lesson for today is from the first chapter of John. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness. Make straight the way of the Lord, as the prophet Isaiah said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" John answered them, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal." This took place in Bethany, across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
I'm going to ask you just to hang with me on this one. It's not going to start like a Christmas sermon, but we're going to get there eventually, okay? Allison died on December 3rd, 2011. I knew intellectually, pastorally, even experientially, that the holidays were an especially hard time to lose someone. I had worked in hospitals during December and had been there when families had lost someone they loved. I'd worked in churches and seen how pastors took extra time to be with those who had lost a loved one any time during that year prior. My own great-grandmother had died on a Christmas Eve, and I remember growing up that after the turkey was carved and the dishes were cleaned, my grandmother always sat there by herself with a little bit of sadness, remembering her mom. I knew that the holidays were an especially hard time for those who were grieving, but when Allison died, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Allison was just 30 years old, younger than me. We were not longtime friends, and in fact, I'd only known her a little over a year. We'd become friends through one of my coworkers, her fiance, Carlos, and I actually officiated their wedding about 2 months before she died. Allison had cancer, colon and liver. She fought fiercely, but the disease won in less than a year. She was smart, beautiful, hardworking, strong, and positive. When she started losing weight from the chemo, she said, "I'm going for supermodel thin, not cancer patient thin." She had carefully chosen a wedding dress that would hide the port where she received her chemo. And even when she was in extreme pain, she hid her illness the best that she could. Sarah and I were there that December 3rd at the hospital with her husband, her family, and close friends when she finally had to let go. Having been trained as a hospital chaplain and as a minister, I kept my own emotions in check, stayed strong, I did not cry. But that night at about 2:30 or 3 in the morning, I woke up from a dead sleep in violent, heaving tears. Then I went back to work. I went on a trip for a conference to Puerto Rico and didn't say anything to anyone about what had just happened. I came back home and went through the motions of the holidays. Other than with Sarah, my wife, I didn't talk about what had happened. Allison and Carlos and the friends that I knew who were part of that life were part of a prior work life from the one that I had was living in at the time. So nobody knew Allison. Nobody knew her or those who were grieving. But what I remember about that holiday was how trite all of the holiday celebrations felt. The decorations seemed thin. The cards seemed empty. The radio Christmas carols I always loved were just obnoxious. I remember walking through the grocery store with the blaring Christmas jingles and feeling like I was being assaulted in my senses by all this noise. Even at church, even the Christmas story itself was painful. The thought of Mary and Joseph reminded me of the grief that Allison's parents must have been feeling. The sweet simplicity of the manger scene felt childish and inconsequential in light of her untimely death. How dare people go around being cheerful when there was so much grief in the world? How dare we sing Silent Night when hearts were blazing with pain? How dare we proclaim Christ's reign when this fantastic young woman was taken so unjustly? Where was the promise of Christmas in that? I was finally starting to understand why Christmas is not so merry for everyone. My story, and to call it my story, is really unfair because I know my grief only began to scratch the surface of what those closest to Allison felt. But my experience of a December lost expanded my view of the Christmas season in ways that I couldn't have imagined before. The holidays are a terrible time to lose someone, because the world around us seems intent on telling us a lie, that all is well, all is merry, all is bright. And of course, it's not just a loss that happens in December. It's the first holiday without Grandpa carving the holiday ham. It's the first holiday without Christmas shopping with your best friend. It's the first holiday waking up Christmas morning alone in the house. Or the 2nd, or the 15th, or the 50th. During the holidays, the losses feel bigger, the vacancies more profound, and the juxtaposition between the story of Christmas, the festive season, and the empty place at the table becomes more profound. Churches have started to be a bit more intentional in acknowledging this. Some, like this church, have had longest night services. Others, blue Christmas services. And churches and school groups and private individuals make extra effort to bring cheer to those who are grieving or sick or lonely or struggling with infertility or struggling to make ends meet. At Carol, we have student groups who are caroling in retirement communities, making tree ornaments and blankets for underserved communities, and purchasing gifts for families and kids in need. These efforts come from a genuine desire to express that deeper meaning, that deeper message of love and peace that are part of the Christmas season. But mostly they're just small band-aids on broken hearts. Because the truth is, whether it is Christmas or not, grief is grief, pain is pain, and suffering is suffering. It is what it is, no matter the season. Life is what it is, no matter the season. When the early Christians started telling the story about Jesus, life was what it was then too. Then the Christmas story wasn't something they had grown up with. They didn't hear Linus's little voice from the peanut strip when they read Luke chapter 2. They didn't hang tinsel on trees or sing away in the manger, and there was certainly no red-nosed reindeer jetting across the sky on Christmas Eve. Who's to say they even celebrated Jesus' birth as any kind of holiday the way that we do? When the early Christians talked about Jesus coming into the world, it wasn't seasonal at all. It was about life. It was about life and death and everything humanity knew being turned upside down. It was about the very order of nature being reorganized, about God touching the earth, touching humanity in the most peculiar and particular way imaginable, as one born into the messy, tragic, unjust, filthy, heartbreaking world we live in. The story of Jesus, of Christmas, wasn't seasonal or trite. It was cosmic. Time tied into a knot with the eternal, the moment the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. We read about this cosmic Christmas carol in John 1. The better known part we'll read on Christmas Eve. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. But the eternal Word hums, even in the bits that we read this morning. The particular person of John, not to be confused with the author of the Gospel, John, the particular person John pens this big, overarching, mystical version of the Christmas story to a specific time and place. The Word, the life, the light was coming into the world, a world that did not know it. But John knew it. John bore witness to the Messiah. He himself was not the light, but he came to bear witness to the light, that all may believe through the light. In this gospel, there's nothing else we need to know about this guy named John. He is not defined as the baptizer or the Baptist. He's not known as Jesus' cousin, and he himself did not come into the world through some divine intervention, as happens in Luke. He is also not the reincarnation of Moses, the prophet, or of Elijah, and he is certainly not the Messiah himself. His answers to the inquiries of religious leaders of the day were completely unsatisfying. Are you this? Are you that? Are you him? Are you he? Nope. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. John was just John. He was just John, as life is just life. And who are you, John? A voice crying out. John was simply a witness to the Word, a witness to the light, a witness to life reordered by the coming of Christ. Being a witness is really the simplest thing in the world to do. It didn't require John to have all the answers. It didn't require John to save anybody or to be anybody special. Being a witness simply meant watching. Witnessing is seeing. It's hearing. It's remembering what one has personally experienced and then telling the honest truth about it. We witness amazing things in this life. Great acts of mercy and kindness, children being born, people being healed. And we witness great suffering too. To be a witness to the light is just that. It is to be. To just be. To be nothing and no one of any great consequence, just an observer of life, an observer of life who sees that the light breaks in even when the night is at its darkest and the season most grim. John reminds us that all we have to be, all we have to do is bear witness. See, hear, experience, and be truthful about it. Be truthful about the light. And be truthful about the darkness. Because the light shines in the darkness. And we can't faithfully and truthfully testify to the light if we aren't also naming the darkness that we experience. For me, personally, I find tremendous relief in this. I found relief on that Christmas that Allison died, and I find relief still. I am relieved to know that God doesn't ask me to be the light. I don't have to generate joy. I don't have to fix things or heal anybody or create out of nothing or even pretend that life is always hunky-dory. I just have to bear witness. All we have to do is bear witness to the light, to what God is doing. I can do that. I can watch for signs of God's inbreaking realm. I can listen for God's promises to be fulfilled. I can perceive love and grace and mercy in this world that goes beyond some superficial supermarket holiday. I can bear witness. I can bear witness to Christ being born again and again every time our feeble human hearts turn towards hope. Being a witness doesn't require anything of us other than that we live a life attentive to the truth of God's light in the world, and that we tell that truth. To tell it honestly, not through the filter of socially acceptable niceties or the falseness of a neatly arranged manger scene. It is to speak the truth of the darkness, to tell the truth of our own grief and pain and suffering, and to speak the even greater truth of the light. It's what we do here at church. That's what we seek to do at Christmas. And in our better moments, that's what we seek to do in life, to bear witness. It's an amazing thing to simply be a witness. It's an amazing gift that we ourselves don't have to be anything other than what we are. Because it is Christ who is the light and the life and the first and the last word. And it is amazing to know that through this cosmic Christ, the very means by which all of the world was created, that through Christ, God has thrown God's lot in with us. In the muck and the messiness of life, God will not let go. The life, the light, the Word became flesh and lived among us. It lives among us still. And we have seen His glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth.